With everything you have on your plate, earning your degree online seems impossible. But at Grand Canyon University, we specialize in helping you fit a master's degree in business into your busy day. Your graduation team, led by your own GCU counselor, provides you with the personal support you need to succeed. Achieve your goals with a plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
Hey everyone, it's Billy Morrison and Ozzy Osbourne here. Our new show, The Madhouse Chronicles, is dropping this April. Join us as we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Visit osbournemediahouse.com for early access. What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
Oh.
You're in the madhouse now.
This week's episode of Talking Simpsons is brought to you by you. That's right, we're on Patreon now, so head on over to patreon.com/talkingsimpsons. For as little as $5 a month, you can help our show and get all kinds of great extra content on top of that. We've got a ton of great bonus content waiting for you right now, so head on over to patreon.com/talkingsimpsons today.
I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy, hoy, everybody. Welcome to Talking Simpsons, recorded live in Bunyan Country. I'm your host, Dear Rat Boy, Bob Mackey, and this is the Laser Time Podcast Network's chronological exploration of The Simpsons. Who else is here with me today?
Henry Gilbert, and I'm both a fairy and a queen.
Oh. And who else?
Senior Wentz's reference, Chris Antista.
Oh, it's all right.
It's all right.
Took my rat boy.
And today's episode is Homer versus Patty and Selma.
And who could forget Dear Rat Boy?
And today's episode aired on February 26, 1995, and as always, Chris will tell us what happened on this mythical day in real-world history.
Stop a glass, Bobby, because it's time to wish congratulations to Motley Crue drummer Tommy Lee and Baywatch star Pamela Anderson, who have just tied the knot and are meant to be. The What a Cartoon show launches on Cartoon Network with a short pilot for what would eventually become Dexter's Laboratory, its first spinoff. And Toshiba, Time Warner, Sony, and Philips, and all the giant media companies have settled on the preferred nomenclature for their super-density multimedia compact discs. The DVD.
Oh, wow. The digital versatile disc.
Digitally versatile disc.
I forgot the DVD consortium. That was a great name there.
Multiple corporate giants trying to come up with a CD that played movies, and they had to settle on a name in early 1995.
Why would the DVD consortium lie to us?
But good old Tommy Lee and Pam Anderson. Oh, yeah. Like, they're... Within days of this
airing,
they're going to make a video. They're going to make quite a famous video. Like, his cock is crazy. Like, it's
all right.
Nuts.
It's all right.
No, come on. That's like at least 10 inches. Like,
it's insanity, bro.
Yeah, and I remember he's transfixed by it. He has mayhem right above... on his stomach. So if you were to say be blowing him, like you're seeing mayhem coming right out.
It looks
like
a vision test.
It looks like a Mexican mural eulogy every time your family is getting blown.
And it's also, we're going to talk a lot about Mr. Show in this episode, actually. But the Mr. Show me your weenus joke, that was a parody of their sex tape.
Look at my hard dick.
Which people talked about. The joke was, if they sound, even though it is a man and a woman, it sounds like two gay guys talking.
That's
about,
right.
Hey, show me your weenus. And wait, what was the middle one on that news thing between DVD and the Tommy Lee?
Cartoon Network's the What a Cartoon Show.
Yeah. If you want to hear us talk about Dexter and Genndy Tartakovsky, that's we talk a bit with Ian Jones-Courtney in our interview.
It's bizarre to think about that. I don't think it's the first original Cartoon Network show, but it
Two
was...
Two Stupid Dogs, sort of.
Yeah, but it was like aired on TNT as well. Yeah. But this is essentially a pilot program.
It really was. It was secretly a pilot program, and... Dexter was a great... That should have been the first one. Powerpuff Girls, maybe.
Before that short aired, they knew Dexter's Laboratory would be their first original
show. It was
show.
Easily the strongest of them. And Ian Jones-Courtney in an interview made a great point about... He had a term for it. He called it Hanna-Barbaname. which he said it was like, you get the action and fluid movement of anime, but with the flat character designs of Hanna-Barbera, and they somehow work together.
And Seth MacFarlane's sort of prototype for Family Guy aired on the What a Cartoon Show. I forget what it's called, but it's basically Peter
and
Brian.
It's a regular schlub and a talking dog.
Yes, and one is really stupid, and one is very smart.
And they have a Star Wars reference, and a woman gets beat up. It's all the filler. It's all the funny things for this. So when I say Mr. Show, that's because this episode is written, is the first episode by Brent Forrester.
Yes.
Who would go on to be a writer for Mr. Show and also The American Office. But
Arrested Development.
And Arrested Development. Mm-hmm. But his most famous scripts from the show, which he did with Dino Stamatopoulos, were The Audition and Pre-Tape Call-In Show.
Can I use this chair, Henry? Can I use this chair? No, seriously. Can I use this chair?
Yes.
Oh, come on.
Wonderful.
A Pre-Tape Call-In Show is one of
it's on our YouTube channel for some
YouTube
reason.
Channel.
Yeah, the audition one, which we were pretending to do, is very funny as well.
Yeah, they're both very funny. But this does have the feel. This episode has a feel of a first-time writer to The Simpsons. It's kind of a stock episode. It feels a little half-baked. And after an episode where the entire town of Springfield is about to go up in smoke, then there's an episode where Homer and Krusty become cartoon clowns together, and then they fly to Australia. This very domestic episode where they barely go anywhere, and it's just about not liking your sisters-in-law. It's very small.
Yeah, and I feel like the Simpsons writing process is they would go on a retreat every year, come up with strong ideas, and then like put them all on a big board. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling these are the remaining ideas on a board at some point. Homer vs. Patty and Selma, Bart, Ballet, and also Mel Brooks.
Yeah, and also, as Oakley has told us, the new writers get the Marge episodes. This isn't exactly a Marge episode, but Patty and Selma are Marge adjacent.
That is my takeaway about one. I think The Simpsons have the worst episode titles in the universe, so please just stick with Simpsons versus plot.
Yeah, I agree.
Julie Kavner doesn't have a time to comedically shine very well unless an episode is focused on Patty and Selma.
Yeah.
She is great and hilarious. I love these two characters.
Me too. They get less use in the Merkin era, and they're not really used as much as I want them to be in this episode, but I love them in these plots.
Yeah, though I think Dan feels a little less to me in this episode. I don't know. It didn't sound like he was trying as hard. Also, a thing I noticed in this episode, directed by Mark Kirkland, the animation also feels like the B team as well. Like, it's lesser animation. It's not as fluid. And there's
Well, the Bart dancing stuff is very, very
that
good.
That was very good, yeah. But and there's a little thing that I couldn't not notice afterwards of, like, their lips. There's, like, a weird curve on the lips every time they talk. They're like, it's not in the stock animation
for
other ones.
I'll have to go back to that.
I wonder if this was given to a B team there or not. But I was just thinking of animation B teams because I read the Hollywood Reporter had this amazing oral history of the X-Men cartoon show, which basically pointed out, like, the reason it looked like dog shit is because Saban Entertainment didn't want to spend an extra penny on it that they had to.
We actually have an article on LaserTimePodcast.com that shows you the original pilot, how awful it looked, and they had to redo it for syndication.
Even though they didn't even want to spend that much money on it. There's also a story in there that the show was a huge success immediately, and then Chaim Saban immediately cut $500 off the pay of every writer.
Wow.
Because he said, hey, if it's a big hit, you get all the name recognition from working on a hit, so I'll just pay you less.
Man, what a slime.
Yeah.
So I like a lot of jokes in this episode, but I feel like what hurts it is that it uses a stock sitcom plot without subverting it in any way. The whole, you're going to be my slave, plot.
Yeah, actually, they never really...
Because he's my butler.
Exactly. I mean, they were calling attention to how hoary and awful that is, and they don't really do much with it in this episode.
Also, the B plot is a real stock plot, too, of like, character discovers talent they never had before or after.
The payoff is very Simpsons-y, though.
That is Simpsons-y. That is a subversion of a plot. They wouldn't end an episode of Home Improvement with one of the kids being beaten. Like, that wouldn't happen. But the Homer thing is a kind of a subversion of, isn't subverted all that much.
Not really.
The only subversion is that Homer is kind of that Homer learns nothing. That I guess that is a subversion. But this is unprecedented, but I think the opening pumpkin scene should get the line of the show. I think it's kind of the best.
I like it a lot.
That's the joke.
Hey, Homer, how come you got money to burn? Or singe, anyway.
Yeah, Homer, what's your secret investment?
Take a guess.
Pumpkins?
Yeah, that's right, Barney. This year I invested in pumpkins. They've been going up the whole month of October. And I got a feeling they're going to peak right around January. and bang! That's when I'll cash in.
To Homer and a Sergeant Pepper who is growing out of the middle of your back.
Bon, you gotta unwrap the plastic before you smoke these.
Homer, you knucklebeak. I told you 100 times. You gotta sell your pumpkin futures before Halloween. Before.
All right, let's not panic. I'll make the money back by selling one of my livers. I can get by with one.
It makes sense this episode aired in February because that's when he would be selling his pumpkin futures.
That's true. Yeah, but I just love, like, right around January when you see the happy Halloween sign, which was fun. I watched this episode on Halloween.
Me too. It's funny when Homer is mad that Barney accurately guesses the surprise. Yes. Even though it's very obvious.
He's like, yeah, you're right. And I'll give credit to the animators for they drew the plastic over his cigar the entire scene. So that he's kind of huffing plastic fumes that Barney has gone from drinking to huffing paint, basically.
Whatever gets you there.
Money to singe is a great way to talk about moderate wealth.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a little. I got some money.
Homer very carefully puts out that $1 bill that he lights a cigar with.
And puts it back in his wad of $1 bills.
Yeah.
And yeah, I like Homer's got a different stockbroker now. I'm guessing the previous one from the Germans episode died.
He was a very sickly man.
Yes. I need an accountant so bad, but I'm not sure I can afford one. Yet apparently I make more money than Homer in 1995. He has a stockbroker and an accountant?
It's easier to own homes back then.
What the hell?
It's, you know, the housing market.
I want a home.
I think old Grimey would have the same complaints.
No, I wish that liver joke, I wish he'd said, I can get by with two or whatever. The joke that Homer thinks he has, you don't have more than one. You have one liver. I think it would have been a funnier joke if he thought he had three livers or four. If he'd said, like, I can get by with three. That's funnier than I can get by with one.
It's still kind of like a too easy, stupid joke.
No, there's like 5 jokes in this episode. I'll get sort to them each at the time. They're like, you could have done better.
It's sort of a what's the number for 911 joke.
Yeah.
Like, a very stock idiot joke you can write in about a second.
Yeah. Yeah. And also we learned that apparently Homer eats lipstick.
Yes.
Which,
I love the squeaky sound of the teeth being cleaned.
We had a deal. Your sisters don't come here after 6 and I stop eating your lipstick.
This is a special occasion. Patty and Selma just got promoted at the DMV.
Yeah, Homer. Let your wife have a glimpse of success for once.
All right. That's the last straw. Time to take out the trash. But first, I'm going to have to ask you to leave.
A great line.
And the animation of him throwing out the couch with them on it and then pulling it back in. But again, that's a very, like, sitcom-y thing. Only Homer's, like, oafishness and super strength is what makes it a heightened thing. And I also do love him. Wrong smash.
Yes. Also the great lines, like, when you have to plant the seeds, you throw away the envelope.
Yes.
Talking about how Homer gave Marge kids. That's the only use.
They got the 3 kids. Like, yeah,
I think that will eventually be a domestic structure. Looking forward to it.
Femdom will go that far.
Get him out of here.
I mean,
I'm a giant liability for my girlfriend, and I don't want her to catch on. Only dogs. Did you have dogs that ate lipstick?
No.
So I thought that was a reference to Homer being dog-like.
That
whatever.
Totally makes sense. I could see. Man.
I think it started with our dogs with my sister's scented whatever.
Oh.
And then they just ate all lipsticks if they could get to them.
I didn't really have dog. I didn't have a dog until after I was 6. So I never experienced a dog eating lipstick. But
I did. And her name was McGaggy.
McGaggy.
But that makes it even. That does make it even a better joke. Not just that Homer is a weirdo who eats flowers and lipstick
and soap.
A million other
and soap. Fancy soap.
Yeah, but that he does it in a dog way. I do like that. But then Homer, I do love Homer's stress dream, actually.
Oh, this is a great, great bit.
This is so great.
Congratulations, Mr. Simpson. This invention of yours has made us all rich, especially you. Mm-hmm. It's simple yet ingenious, and it fits right in the palm of your hand. Every person in America now owns one of these, and in many cases, 3 or 4.
Could I just get a look at that?
No, why would you need to see it? You're the genius who invented the product in question.
But could I just...
Now, don't worry. You'll get to see it just as soon as we unveil our new ad campaign.
Let me see. Out of the way.
Homer, wake up. There's still a few minutes till our usual bedtime.
No, my invention.
I love how his dream is trying to screw him out of knowing anything. The product in question.
Yeah, my dreams do that all the time.
Yeah.
Either I've written something or I came up with something that did well and I could just never know quite what it was.
No, I've had those dreams where like I wake up, I'm like, that's the perfect idea for it. And then as I investigate the thought, well, no, for I'm like, yeah, when I do the, oh no, that's a dumb idea. Why would I do that? It
sounds like they're describing only, I could only think of the iPhone.
It feels like an iPhone thing. It does. Looks it would like fit a, in the palm of your
it
hand.
It looks like an IED from like Iraq.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, actually, what it looks like to me is a fidget cube.
Yeah.
Which are the cooler kids today with their fidget spinners. They need to get on the fidget cube.
It looks like the Phantasm ball, actually.
It's like a Bop It with no speaker.
Yeah, the function of it definitely sounds like an iPhone, though, in function ways. And that,
changed everything. Some Americans own 3 or 4.
And then Marge is, that is a joke, too. She's, her concern is that Homer fell asleep a few minutes before their normal bedtime. Straight into that, we have Homer's fantasy about his entire family, which I do love.
Oh, my money problems.
Money problems? Homer, are we in some sort of fiduciary trouble?
Oh, Marge, my loyal wife. Of course not. And Lisa, my little princess. And who could forget dear Rat Boy?
Rat Boy? I resent that. Bart, I told you before, stop gnawing on the drywall.
It's weird that might be the most notable joke in this episode.
Yeah.
I love Dear Rat Boy. And they put a lot of...
out of nowhere.
They put a lot of funny words in Marge's mouth in this episode. I love fiduciary trouble.
Yeah, they give her silly things to say, but the...
My line of the show might be later. It's a very, very weird Marge line.
Yeah, but the Rat Boy thing actually is funny to me, too, for a personal reason that... I tried to Talking Simpsons before we had it, long before podcasts, I had a report on Romeo and Juliet that I had to do for a junior high class, and I wanted it to be an audio-only project, which I could only do with a digital recorder, and I wanted needle drops of cutaways to things from other stuff, and one of them was Dear Rat Boy. And so I had to put in my VHS tape of the show, get it to that exact moment, hit record, and just there was no editing software either, so I just had to record in order.
Ooh, I remember that.
And my teacher did not get it and gave me like a C
in Romeo and Juliet was Dear Rat Boy?
Tybalt, I think.
Okay.
The dude, the guy who gets killed in the middle who loved his sister or something. I only remember the plot of it as regards to Tromeo and Juliet. So.
I prefer Romeo plus Juliet.
But in Tromeo and Juliet, they normalize incest.
Oh, you're right.
Is that Guardians of the Galaxy, James Gunn?
It was.
I think so.
He wrote it. Yep. Yeah. Good time.
That was one of their last like really legit movies, I think. Legit is in quotes.
Then they go straight to, it's something I don't like when they do in the editing where they cut from Bart to Bart. Like it's, but I guess it's really the only way to work. The ballet thing is completely and wholly separate from this. They never
connect
intersect
in no way
at all. But I do like him saying like, you're right, Milhouse. Fun is fun. and Milhouse screaming truant. But,
truant.
Then we get a rare appearance of Richard and Lewis, Bart's season one friends who now are nobody and say nothing.
They get about one line every 5 years.
I checked the wiki. Each have had 4 different voice actors.
Wow.
Because they don't keep them. But
I wonder if it was named after Richard Lewis.
I bet it is.
This gets uglier every year. Any sign of Bart and Milhouse? No. And if they don't get here soon, it'll be TS for them. I don't feel right. Did you hear that, Bart? That was a tardy bell. Truant! 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 They'll all say. Ah, who needs him? I can have fun all by myself.
So night.
God, Bart loves that Senior Wintus bit.
He loves it. So, yeah, you want to talk about Senior Wintus?
Sure. He was a very, very famous puppeteer. I think made most famous by the Ed Sullivan Show. But he existed up until the 80s, I believe. But it was a bit with a little boy named Johnny. But Johnny was his talking hand. He put a wig and 2 googly eyes on. So it'd be a lot of, like, rapid-fire back-and-forth patter between the two.
And I had to research this with Henry. We a couple, like 2 years ago, we did the definitive guide to Robin Williams' genie impressions.
Oh, yes, yeah, he does that too in it.
And I just want to mention that, yes, it's an obvious plug for that article. But I can't, I just looked at it, I was going to share it, I can't believe how many YouTube videos got flagged from that article. Like, who is copywriting Senior Wences and Walter Brennan footage?
There's not a lot of Wences online, actually. There are very few clips, but it's funny, like, as you go forward in time, he's sort of an old man in the 60s. When he's doing the stuff in the 80s, it's like a withered old man. Like, hello, my name is Johnny. And it's like just the
saddest clips of Senior Wences are in color.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Let's see yourself.
No, Johnny, no.
No, no.
Why? It is very difficult.
Easy.
Easy?
Yes.
No.
No.
No, 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 no. Very confusing music.
Difficult.
I say difficult?
Yes.
Yes.
Very easy.
I say very difficult, Johnny.
Yes.
Yes. I say difficult?
Yes.
Yes. Say difficult.
Difficult.
Louder.
Difficult.
Louder.
Difficult.
Louder.
Difficult.
Louder.
Difficult.
Good. Very difficult.
For you. For me, very easy.
There you go. Listen, we were all scarred by a war, people. That was very funny.
I got a genuine laugh from
Yeah, it's cute. I find that puppet just grotesque, though.
Yeah.
But I like how he hides his mouth moving.
It's why the Simpsons were so important, not just comedy writing, but that was the first animated character on television. Not really.
And obviously, South Park fans will know that as, like, Jennifer Holpe.
Oh, you're right.
It's exactly that.
Tackle somebody.
Loves you. But this was the first time ever, this episode, I never got the joke of TS for them.
TS.
It's the second TS reference.
Yeah, well, so I only got it as that's TS for them, meaning tough shit.
Tough shit.
But the joke is it'll be TS for them, cut to tethered swimming. TS.
Yes.
Whoa. They are saying... It'll be TS for them, meaning they'll be stuck with tethered swimming.
Oh,
that's the joke
you
that
just
I
got that?
I never got that.
Well, because we talked about when Homer said TS.
Right. I thought they were just saying tough shit.
Me, an intellectual, realized that as a child.
I never, when it clicked for me.
TS,
I never got that.
By the way, is how, when we're texting one another, how we refer to this show. But it wasn't a saying in where I was from.
It wasn't, I think I asked my parents. But yeah, tethered swimming is real, and it's actually called that. It's not a sport, it's more for strength training. You wrap bands around yourself, and you swim again. You swim.
It's mainly to punish servants.
Pretty much, but now they have those endless pools where you just swim against the current that's
true.
Happening.
Okay.
Yeah,
so. That sounds like, I mean, that sounds like something CrossFit people do. But
it
was just this moment of like, that's why they cut to tethered swimming.
I had no idea.
What did you think it meant? What do you think the joke
was? I just
thought
they were saying tough shit, and then they cut to
I didn't
Ralph
get
for
tough
no
shit
reason.
Until just now, because it was referenced in a preview.
Well, I think less of all of my co-hosts now.
It wasn't a saying, bro!
Let's move on. Let's move on.
Yeah.
The Simpsons will be right back.
Is this projection accurate? Is Talking Simpsons getting a live show? Yes! The answer is yes, everybody. Talking Simpsons is getting a very own live podcast recording. Where? At San Francisco Sketch Fest in good old San Francisco. When? January 28th, 5:30. How much are tickets? They're free. You just gotta claim yours first if you're gonna be going. Interested parties only. It's gonna be at the Piano Fight Bar in San Francisco, January 28th, 2018 at 5:30 p.m. We're gonna be doing a live podcast recording. More details to come on what we're going to be doing there soon, but be sure that it is going to be a gay old time at SF Sketchfest, and we are super honored to be there, and we can only do that thanks to the support of all of our people on Patreon. Just $5 a month gets you access to a ton of special things that you will only find there, including every episode of Talking Critic, a ton of exclusive interviews, and much, much more. So please sign up at Patreon, and don't forget, mark your calendar for January 28, 2018, for Talking Simpsons, the live podcast recording at SF Sketchfest.
Hey,
Hey, if you're listening to this during the week of Black Friday, maybe you should think about getting a gift for the Simpsons lover in your life, and I know the gift I would suggest. The t-shirt for Talking Simpsons! The Talking Simpsons t-shirt you can get for yourself. It's on Shirtsicle, and you can head to shirtsicle.com, or you can go to tiny.cc/talkingshirt and pick it up. It is a beautiful sky blue based on the design for Ion Springfield, done by our wonderful friend of the show, Nina Matsumoto. Just $19.99 will get you your own t-shirt, plus shipping and tax. And it ships somewhat internationally, so just because you're not in the United States doesn't mean you won't be able to get this shirt. Check it out for yourself at shirtsicle.com or tiny.cc/talkingshirt.
Hey, this is Sideshow Luke Perry. You're listening to Talking Simpsons on Laser Time.
This week on Laser Time, the internet's seventh leading pop culture podcast, the gang is tackling a brand new topic.
So I tried to find a negative review of Citizen Kane. One star, it had no color. It was utterly depressing. The camera angles were okay, but the acting really wasn't too good. All the actors were always interrupting themselves or each other, and it just didn't flow well in my mind. And this is my favorite line of all time. It's just like the Blair Witch Project.
I mean, he's right.
It's just like the Blair Witch Project. A lot of people watch Citizen Kane because of the hype and find themselves disappointed. It's sad but true. Citizen Kane was a real disappointment, totally unoriginal plot, bad lighting, cheesy sets, boring too, and gosh, what is this Rosebud thing? That was freaky. Whoa, dude. Anyway, this movie was whack and mad boring. It was a bummer, too, that it was all black and white and all the guys looked the same because they all wore suits.
That's Laser Time. New every Monday on LaserTimePodcast.com, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So Mo wants to immediately break Homer's legs as collateral, which I love that. It's a new level of darkness to Mo, but yeah. he'll get darker. One of my favorite dark Mo jokes, which they said was Hank Azaria doing a ad lib, but of him just pointing a shotgun at Homer and saying, like, that's right, I rob people now, I guess. But then Homer goes, oh, also that they show Lisa in her hockey uniform when she signed up for it. So I think that I wonder if that is supposed to be continued continuity from Lisa on Ice.
Actually, there's one thing I want to talk about. It's a very weird line from Skinner that is clearly ADR, and it's not funny. It's him saying, well, you should have gotten here earlier, Bart. There's no joke, but they clearly had rewritten what he was saying.
Yeah, to make it just a statement of fact instead of... I feel like the joke could have been something
Vietnam
like...
a Vietnam reference.
Yeah, or him saying, I took ballet all the time, and I loved it. Or a million
Billy showed up late to the banks of Da Nang.
But yeah, instead it was like, not a joke. And I was like, this...
Yeah,
I don't
and
know.
On a very flat line, so that made me wonder. Sorry.
For ADR especially, you're just like, why would you do that? I just, And though I do like Milhouse getting kicked by Nelson in his
Taekwondo!
We've talked before about like... I don't know. When April Richardson was on Laser Time, I talked about how I was so afraid of growing up and going into high school. And part of that was the idea of having to pick your own class. Like, I don't want to fucking be here anyway. Quit making me do research and deciding what I want to do. And it's just a little early for elementary school kids to... You had no choice at this age what classes you took.
It was like all-purpose gym, basically.
Yeah, like, it's just gym. Yeah, but they can't... That's the thing. They're stuck with the age groups. They can't change. They have to give junior high and high school things to Bart and Lisa because they'll never be in junior high or high school.
This is a weak episode, but I have to say this act break might be one of my favorites. I forgot how long it goes on.
First off, I do like Homer's threatening bank guy. I'm just like, well, I'm sorry, I've been pre-declined for all these credit cards. But he's kind of like a tough guy. Like, we'll go to the house next house with no numbers.
Yeah.
But
and Homer pushed the dog around like a vacuum. It's on his permanent record.
This season, they did, in the Merkin years, they did so many jokes of Homer laughs too long at something, but this is the ultimate version of it.
You're my last chance. Bottom of the barrel, Hail Mary, long shot. Wish you would do it, but probably won't. Final resort to lend me money.
We'll take care of you. Yes, care.
Ha 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 ha
Cut him a check and get him the hell out of here.
He's still laughing.
I forgot how long it went on. For a second, I thought it cut after he starts laughing along with them, but no. They say, get him out of here, and he still keeps laughing.
He's cut him a check and get him the hell out of here. I forgot he even keeps laughing after that. What they're giving him can't be a small amount of money, like a mortgage payment. You know, I wish I'd looked into this. What
I don't
a
know.
Mortgage payment
in the
is.
Midwest, knowing what a mortgage payment is compared to my rent here is just like, well, that's three times less.
Yeah, I would have owned a house by now. Probably.
I had one in Florida, and it was $750 a month.
Yeah.
Wow. I could absolutely afford that. I should buy a house and not here.
Yeah. This is back when that could ruin the Simpsons family, though. One missed mortgage payment, and the house belongs to the bank.
Well, remember that plot on Roseanne one year where they took out a second mortgage on their house to pay for something, to pay for his motorcycle shop.
That's right,
And
every failed business that Dan had.
Every season he'd have a new one. So then they come back. I like Homer's satisfiedness of like, I'm going to tilt my chair. Like
that's slanty.
And those steaks are, the steaks are some pretty steaks. But yeah, then Patty and Selma come over and they let Homer know that they own him. And this euphemism doesn't work. I always thought that Siegfried and Roy have a very, you know, equal partnership. But it's a funny gag.
This has been such a nice, peaceful dinner. Mm-hmm. It calls for a celebration. I'm going to make the most international coffee in the house. Montreal morn.
All right, you had your fun. Now get lost.
Our fun hasn't begun yet.
Huh?
We know something you don't want Marge to know. Now we own you, like Siegfried owns Roy. I'm sorry. All we have is Nescafe. I'm very, very sorry. Oh, Marge, you're just in time. Homer's getting ready to give us a foot rub. You are?
No! I'm giving him a foot massage. At least let me have that.
You can start with the corns. Then you can move on to Bunyan Country.
A lot of jokes about Patty and Selma's feet.
Yeah.
The Simpsons.
Though I would think in another episode they'd be disgusted at the idea of Homer touching their feet.
Yeah.
Like they wouldn't want him, but I guess humiliating him is more interesting to them than
they enjoy Homer's obsequiousness, which we'll hear that word later. I do love the jokes about bad instant coffee. That was sort of a craze in the early 90s. The international coffees were just like crappy flavored coffees, but they weren't actual, you know, brewing coffees.
Okay.
There's like powder you mix into hot water.
Yeah, I didn't find any reference to this because it was my girlfriend made a Simpsons reference the other night, which is rare. The secret ingredient is salt. The continued joke that Marge is this like the most basic bitch cook in the universe.
Yeah.
I also
oregano.
Like, I love that the most international is French Canadian. Like that's
Montreal Morin. But there were those commercials in the 90s where it's like two women chatting over coffee. Like, what was that waiter's name? John Luke.
Oh,
like,
my God. Yes.
Exactly.
Oh, I wish I'd pulled up that commercial. I forgot that.
But I don't think anyone drinks that crap anymore.
Yeah, that's right. John Luke. That was the Grey Poupon of coffees.
The cafe. Yeah.
Rich, creamy tasting coffee with a hint of vanilla flavor. French Vanilla Cafe.
I love this coffee.
From General Foods International Coffees.
I loved that waiter. Jean-Luc.
Is Nescafe really bad? I'm not a coffee drinker.
I mean, I don't drink any instant coffee because it's all shit, but it is like the lowest tier instant coffee. It's just like, yeah.
Just love Marge's very, very sorry. I also love on the commentary, they bring up that Brad Bird loved the drawing of Homer with his like glued on smile.
That's
like
a great expression.
It is so great that he's just trying to put on a brave face. And then we get our first of two guest stars on this, the better guest star who's actually playing a character, Susan Sarandon.
Okay, steady, Bart. Taking ballet doesn't make you any less of a man.
All right, girls. Today we learn the dance of the fairy queens. You can either be a fairy or a queen. It's wide open. and what have we here? A young man, maybe, who thinks he can be the next Baryshnikov?
I don't want to be the next anything. I'm only taking this stupid class because they made me.
So, he has fire in the belly. But it will take more than belly fire to be the next Baryshnikov.
Look, Boris, I think ballet's for sissies.
Ballet is for the strong, the fierce, the determined, but for the sissies, never. Now, put on this fussy attire. You,
or a fairy?
That's great.
You are a fairy.
This is Susan Sarandon, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yes.
Sarandon,
yes.
She had done voice acting before, I believe, at James and the Giant Peach, the Henry Selick live action slash stop motion
is
picture.
Way better than Nightmare Before Christmas. James and the Giant Peach is so good.
I don't think so, but I also think it's very good.
Let's have
it's
this
It's also
argument.
Very good.
It's a very stock character of the Russian ballet teacher,
but I just wanted to ask, what the fuck is going on with Susan Sarandon? So right as of this recording, she's the guest star in the best episode of Rick and Morty, and I just saw her on Conan.
Oh wait, who is she in Rick and Morty?
She's the therapist who teaches people how to eat poop.
That's
and
her.
Pickle Rick.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
She has the best lines of like the season of that ruined the show because a feminist wrote it. But
while it is a kind of embarrassing to be a Rick and Morty fan, I love that show and that's a great episode.
Yes,
and she makes it even better.
Yeah.
And I also love Nathan For You. Nathan Fielder was just on Conan, and his agreement with Conan said, like,
if I had run out of interesting stuff to say, I brought in a backup guest.
And then Susan Sarandon walks out and says nothing for 7 minutes and sits next to him just in case. Nathan, no, don't talk to her. I'm trying to be the most interesting. Is Susan Sarandon on the... She's an Oscar winner.
Yeah.
Susan Sarandon.
Well, she's just having fun.
Is she on the cusp of good comedy?
I think she is just... She's having fun right now. She's famous. Like, a lot of Hillary voters hate her and, like, blame her for... Hillary losing, which is like, yeah, she was a Bernie supporter, but
she seems pretty down to earth.
I don't think steel mill workers in Detroit are listening to Susan Sarandon's opinion on who to vote
A-list
for.
Oscar winning, just does all this good shit. Is willing to do.
She doesn't get to star in much stuff these days because she's kind of
why she's still
out
hot
of it.
As fuck.
I agree. Actually, I just saw on its premiere day, which I didn't intend to yesterday. This recording, I hung out with my mom, and she's like, "Well, let's see a movie." Well, what movie? Bad Moms Christmas?
Yay!
Wait, what's that one about?
Well, so it's the sequel to Bad Moms, where...
I see.
Mila
That's
Kunis,
my line of the show. Good
Mila
one.
Kunis is a bad mom. In the first one, she's a bad mom, who then meets Kristen Bell and Catherine Hahn, and Catherine Hahn is... She's a bad mom, and she don't care. She's a single mom who fucks when she wants to, and she's crazy and gets drunk and has fun. And then Mila Kunis learns to wind down and be cool like Catherine Hahn. Now those same characters are at Christmas time. And that's the joke.
I see.
It is certainly a film. But the thing that's supposed to really sell you on is that you get to meet the moms of the moms. The mother of Mila Kunis is Christine Baranski. Mm-hmm. Then you have the mom of Kristen Bell is Larry David's wife.
Cheryl Hines. My hometown.
She's the funniest person in it. And Catherine Hahn's mom is... Susan Sarandon, and she's great. That she is this old roadie who never loved her child at all and just abandoned her and only wants gambling money.
I am so in love with Susan Sarandon right now for some reason. From Rocky Horror Picture Show, Dead Man Walking. She's great in Cloud Atlas. Yeah, I said it.
She is.
Thelma and Louise, I just saw it for the first time a few years ago.
It's great. It's great.
The Simpsons episode that it referenced. It's fucking awesome.
I love her. And also that she would return 11 years later on The Simpsons to voice FEMAC, the female Macintosh computer, the computer for women, in Dana Gould's season 17 written episode, Bart Has Two Mommies.
I'm sure I've seen that.
It's actually not... Yeah, I think of it as one of the better new episodes, and by new I mean a decade old.
Mm-hmm.
Marge starts taking care of Rod and Todd, and she thinks that they need to loosen up and that Flanders is too protective of them. Meanwhile, Bart gets kidnapped by a gorilla, which would then happen like a year later in an American Dad episode, too. Hmm. And there must have been something ripped from the headlines.
In the news or something, yeah.
It ends with Bart... telling Rod that gay means a good thing, and then Rod says, Daddy, Mrs. Simpson's made me gay! That's the end of the episode.
I do remember this.
And so, Susan Sarandon has doubled up as voices on The Simpsons. So,
Lenny and Carl are going to go out and get a Zima, and I love this quietly funny line, stop wallowing in your self-pity, pull yourself together and come get drunk with us.
Yes, yeah. In case you don't know what Zima is, it's seriously delicious.
Wow. So this... guy sits down, he goes,
nice bottle. Very, what is it?
Zima.
Beer?
No, something different.
Wine cooler.
Not so sweet, try a zip.
Zip? What's in it? Essence of Patanga. Am I right?
No!
Okay.
It's enough of that Zima.
It's yeah. Sprite with a little bit of alcohol.
To quote Kevin Nealon, tastes like zit. That's from the That's Weekend update from like 1993.
Yeah. I watched the clip about Zima from We Love the 90s. I think it made me laugh out loud because of how fucking mean it is. Patrice O'Neill in the middle of it goes, Zima's gay! And then just like smash. That's what he
said. That sounds like him.
Zima's gay!
I love Patrice
O'Neill. It was a difference between. But then they cut to Christopher Lowell, a gay comedian, and goes like, I didn't get Zima's. I didn't like Zima's.
I'm pretty sure I still see Zima.
It's still around.
And I'm like,
oh, I drank a bunch of it in Japan. It's
well,
still
so that is the history
there.
Of Zima. Zima, which is. From Coors, by the way. It was them. It was Coors trying to get into the wine cooler market.
The
but
upscale
exactly.
customers.
Yes. So they invented it. They stopped production of it in 2008 in America, but mm-hmm. it was still on sale in Japan, which that was... I went to bars when I've been in Japan. I'm like, Zima? Mm-hmm. What the fuck? You guys... And then I was like, oh, I actually kind of like Zima. I would drink Zima before most beers. I would, but...
Henry doesn't like beer. I would not.
It's basically Smirnoff Ice, though.
Yeah.
But then last... Or this year, it got a limited re-release in America because... They'll make more of anything from the 90s to sell it to us. So they
remade a Crystal Pepsi, too, right?
Yep.
And yeah. fucking and Bubsy, I'm still not happy.
Oh, yeah, he's in this room somewhere. Oh, God.
And apparently the Zima re-release sold so well that they're going to make more Zima in a bigger release.
That's how you should interpret that.
Yes.
Idiocy.
So that's what Zima is, guys. But they get to make fun of two effeminate drinks in here. Zima and Tab will both get shots in here. That also lets you know how dated this episode is. Like, they're drinking Zima. And
it was new. Oh, I love this line. It's too clever by half, yes, but yeah. I love how clever it is. Oh. And that Homer, it flies right over his head. But
yeah. Oh, sorry. I also did love that Sarandon's character couldn't think... another superhero after Batman, so he says, Magellan.
Yeah.
Actually, maybe this should be line of the show.
Am I wrong? Or did it just get fatter in here?
Request permission to slink by.
Permission pending. First, light our cigarettes.
But you're already smoking cig... You're really pushing it.
Come on, Homer. You can't spell obsequious without I-O-U.
I'll have to trust you on that.
Well, Marge was always a good speller. Let's ask her.
No! Don't tell Marge. I'll be good.
It's almost too smart of Homer to think to burn the I-O-U while he's lighting his cigarettes. But obsequious does need the I-O-U in it to be spelled.
And it means, like, overly servile.
Ah, it's beautiful.
And that's what Homer's being to Patty and Selma. He's being obsequious.
It's so great that Homer's like, gonna have to take your word on that. That leads straight into Homer becoming a Hanna-Barbera dog.
Does this have the great Marge line at the end? Okay.
Just for that, you have to crawl around on the floor like the dog you are.
But you... Yes, ma'am.
Now say, I am Homer Simpson, the lowly dog, in a dog voice.
I am Romer Rutrun.
Well, good. Jump, Homer, jump. What's going on in here?
Rutrun, 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 Rutrun.
What's that paper?
What paper?
Homer, is this projection accurate? Did you borrow money from my sisters?
I don't know, Marge. I can't be expected to keep track of all my wheelings and dealings.
He blew all your savings on jack-o'-lanterns.
Duke told!
Yeah, so is this projection accurate is my line of the show. It is so purposely clumsy.
Here, I'll
go for it.
Please. Sorry, I had to pull rank on that.
Just mine is Rapture Bootery Ruffin one, so it's the same clip.
Same scene, but... Yeah. It is a cheat. Like, the lamp has to turn into a rear projection machine, and the piece of paper has to become transparent.
And fall upside down, by the way.
But it's beautiful. Like, it's a great line. Marge, it would have functioned just the same if Marge said, is this true?
Yeah.
But instead, is this projection accurate?
And there is a weird kind of dance they're doing in which it is kind of uncomfortable to see Homer manhandle adult women.
Yes.
So you don't actually see the tossing happen. They're very careful with that, I noticed.
Well, and the joke that he threw Marge out and then immediately like, I'm sorry, Marge, kiss.
And there's great Foley, too, where him running back and forth. Yeah. But I do think they didn't show the actual... tossing. You just see their bodies fly out of the
house.
You
need a little separation from that. And I also love that Homer version of being sad about it is just like, you can sleep on the couch and okay, do make me breakfast, but I'll eat it under the table.
Yes, I love Marge's line about how things are going not so good. Frankly, he's under the table.
Frankly, he's under the table.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, Bart has a very realistic idea of what will happen to little gay boys.
Super true.
Bravissimo, Bart! Next week, class gives its first recital, and you will dance the male lead.
Dance in front of my whole school? What is it with you and ballet?
I know you have great conflict, Bart. You love ballet, yet you fear the boys will laugh at you. No?
No, I fear the girls will laugh at me. I fear the boys will beat the living snot out of me.
It's a very, very honest fear.
And Bart really does do a demi entrechante in it. I looked it up. So in ballet terminology, putting demi at the front means a smaller, lesser version of something. So a demi whatever. And so an entrechante is, as defined by Wikipedia, a step of beating in which the dancer jumps into the air and rapidly crosses the legs before and behind.
I did watch YouTube videos of that. Is this the clip where he drinks a tab after the line?
Yeah, he drinks a tab, yeah. That's so now that I'm into that,
was that
jam.
A gay riff? Like,
it was seen as a girly drink.
Yeah,
for sure.
Drinking a diet soda in a pink can was not the most masculine thing Bart could do.
I've ordered a tab specifically, but never outside of a skating rink. It's been a long time.
Yeah, tab is beautiful. I love the
Sarah Silverman
episode.
So good.
With the tab. The
Might
battle
be the defining
of the tab
episode.
Between the gay guys.
Homer tries to order a tab in the next season through his computer. Where's my tab?
Where's my tab? And then this is, I think, the best joke in the episode about the mocking the artifice of sitcoms, the Classy Joe's commercial.
Yeah.
Hey, Dad, what you doing?
Daddy has very important work to do. He's looking through the want ads to find a part-time job.
Dad, that's a gag paper we got at the carnival.
Oh, no wonder I didn't hear about Bart being elected world's greatest sex machine. Oh, I'll never pay off that debt.
Need money fast. You got no experience? Step up to elegance. Become a limo driver at Classy Joe's.
That's it. I'll make money with a chauffeur job. Good thing you turned on that TV, Lisa.
I didn't turn it on. I thought you turned it on.
No. Well, anyway, turn it off.
It is off.
That is great.
The joke is that in every sitcom, the TV will tell you the next plot point. You're like, what am I going to do? And then TV has a commercial that tells you the next thing you're going to do.
I mean, I don't like what I would consider a C plot in this episode that should have been brought in earlier, because they could have had a lot of fun with Homer being a chauffeur, maybe move the Bart ballet stuff to another episode. But there's just too much going on.
Yeah, it's a little busy. The ballet thing could have, they could have all gotten more time and just like, save the ballet.
Yeah, and the chauffeur thing is basically one bit.
It has
and that's
one scene. But first, Bart impresses the kids with his spiky-haired masked dancing.
That spiky-haired masked dancer is really something. I wonder who he is.
He's graceful, yet masculine. So it's okay for me to enjoy this.
This reminds me of the movie Fame, and to a lesser extent, the TV series, which was also called Fame.
I don't even know exactly why I love that joke, but I just love that
he
makes that personal distinction out loud.
Yeah.
Like, instead of, he could have just said, this reminds me of Fame, but he has to make sure, you know, it reminds him of both the movie and the TV show.
As a pop culture pundit, like, Fame's resonance is almost gone.
Pretty much.
By this time, No, but I mean, Nelson should not know about Fame.
It went six seasons.
Or Andy Williams.
Wait, the show went
apparently.
Six seasons?
Yeah, it was
my
like
God.
83 to 90 or something.
That's shocking.
I've never seen it. I don't know what anything about it, and I have no idea why Nelson would remember it, but apparently it like only just went off the air around the time Nelson is making this reference.
Oh, wow.
I bet it's full of licensed music, which is why we don't
I'm
never
sorry,
saw it in syndication, I would bet.
Yeah.
But Fame the movie is much better than Fame the TV show. Not that any
There's
of it
the
really
song
does.
From Fame has lasted longer than the movies.
That's true. Fame, I'm gonna live forever. All right.
And
so
now we get sued.
Okay, so this is... I love Mel Brooks.
Me too.
This is a moment where the show crosses a line and really doesn't try hard with it. This is the first time... This is a Muppet Show moment, really, honestly. Like,
ouch.
Which they literally did do on the Muppet Show with Mel Brooks. Of like, Mel Brooks?
Mel Brooks?
Oh, yeah. So here it is here.
Oh, wow. I can't believe my very first passenger is comedy legend Mel Brooks. I love that movie. Young Frankenstein scared the hell out of me.
Thanks.
Hey, let's do that 2,000-pound man thing. I'll be that Carl Reiner guy, and you'll be what's-his-face.
Homer, it's not that easy. It takes the genius of Carl Reiner and the rhythm and timing that only he and I...
Sir, today every country has a national anthem. Did they have national anthems 2,000 years ago?
Sure, sure we had. Of course, we was caves. But every cave had a national anthem. I'll never forget my cave's national anthem.
What was that national anthem?
Let him all go to hell except Cave 76. What's with your siren? What's with the siren?
That's, I'd love that last part.
Yes,
though.
I do like him saying it in his old man voice. And like, no, I mean, what's with the siren?
And as a kid, I did not get this. This
same here.
No, I've never heard of the 2,000-year-old man. Which let's hear the original 2,000-year-old man.
Yeah, we should point out, I think Henry and I were talking, this is like an improv bit. They just sort of go back and forth with each other, and no recording of it's the same.
Yeah.
So they have some similar components.
It's just Carl Reiner as the straight man soliciting old man memories from the 2,000-year-old man. And they were very popular, like bits they do on shows, they do on albums. This is from an animated version of it that they made in the 70s. Wow.
Is it true that you are 2,000 years old?
Oh, boy. Yes.
You are it's hard to believe, sir, because in the history of man, nobody's ever lived more than 167 years, as the man from Peru would claim to be. But you claim to be 2,000.
Yes, I'll be. I'm not yet. I'll be... 2000 October 16th.
Wow. Yes, Carl Reiner and Mel Brooks are still hanging in there.
Yeah,
they're in their 90s.
Still with us, crossing our fingers.
Yes, I believe Mel's in better shape from what I hear.
Yeah.
He's the only person from his era who's still funny.
Yeah.
His Mark Maron interview is an amazing one. Give it a listen from a couple of years ago. And then he talks about how Carl Reiner's at about 80%.
He makes fun of his best friend for being... he's still kind of there, right?
Well, because in both their cases, both their wives have passed away, so they're just kind of hanging out all the time.
Yeah, I thought Rob Reiner said they hang out every night.
Yep.
They eat dinner together all the time, watch all their television shows and movies together. It's really cute.
Mel's keeping him active, like, which is real nice. And that Mel...
And Young Frankenstein.
I love it.
I could... Look, it's a good joke, but you could be scared by Young Frankenstein. I like Young Frankenstein. It is not as funny as everyone seems to think it is, but it is hyper-authentic to the Universal Monster movies that it's sending up. It's beautiful.
I think it's shot beautifully.
Yeah.
It could be his most pretty movie.
And it came out the same year as Blazing Saddles.
It's not as laugh-a-minute as Blazing Saddles.
That's
but,
the funniest Mel Brooks thing ever.
Craft-wise, it's a better film that has a better ending. Like, Blazing Saddles intentionally falls apart into a flaming wreckage at the end on purpose, and it's great. But as a story told, and also as a parody of a thing, one is a parody of a Western, one's a parody of horror, it works better as a parody, too. And Gene Wilder is better in Young Frankenstein,
too.
For sure. My grandfather's ideas were doo-doo!
But I remember watching it as a kid, and it's just, it's dark, spooky, and Gene Wilder is constantly screaming.
He's always screaming.
I didn't read it as a comedy as a little kid. My dad did.
We should say that Mel Brooks is on this episode because he went to the recording with Anne Bancroft. Who played Lowenstein Wise.
That
sounds like something I would do. Hey, while you're here, let's record something.
Anyway, his late wife, then alive, played Marge's therapist in Fear of Flying. They're like, okay, Mel Brooks is here. Let's talk to him about getting him on the show. So this entire subplot is just built for Mel Brooks to land in it for 30 seconds.
So I do like a little bit. I think that felt like real Dan Castellaneta as Homer improvising.
Yeah, it sounded like it.
And the 2,000 pound old man thing.
Oh man,
would then be a joke on Mr. Show, Brent Forrester's next job.
Before we start, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I know from listening to the Mr. Show commentaries, which are great, they hate this sketch so much. It's one of the sketches they hate. It's so stupid.
Well, at worst, it's bad improv.
I love it because it's so dumb. The idea is so dumb.
And this is the listening to the Mr. Show commentaries are the only reason I know what The Simpsons was talking about.
Yeah,
and it took years.
God, I just love the chickens. Delicious chickens.
That's the name of the episode, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
The joke is that a man crashed on an airplane and ate the entire airplane over a weekend. But then that turns out to be so funny of the interviewer talking to the fat guy that then it becomes the 2,000-pound old man sketch, which I just love this line so much.
Who was the first caveman?
Murray.
Did you eat him?
Eat him? I'm not that old. I'm only 2,000 pounds.
It doesn't make any sense.
So dumb.
It doesn't make any sense. That's why I love
it. I'm not that old. I'm only 2,000 pounds.
Jesus, I love you, Mr. Show.
Oh God, I love that.
2,000-pound old man.
And I also think the joke is that Homer gives him a terrible setup. Like, all these countries have national anthem these days. Like, no, they don't. It's not a new thing to have national anthem. So then we get to Mel Brooks Part 2, where Homer gets caught without a chauffeur's license, which... in today's day and age of Uber and Lyft is such a... it's one of the most dated things in this episode.
It's almost cruel we force immigrants to get a chauffeur's license before they can get an iPhone.
Now chauffeurs rule the world, as Frank TV's Frank once predicted.
Chauffeur's license, eh?
Mel, buckle your Porsche belt!
Since you're trying to make a getaway in park, I'm guessing you don't have a license. Better head down to the DMV. These two broads will help you out.
Wow. Officer, this man is making me a little edgy. Could you please give me a ride to the airport?
Hey, you're Mel Brooks. Sure, I'll give you a ride.
Thank you.
On the way, we can do that $2,000 man thing. You be Carl Reiner, and I'll be Police Chief Wiggum.
Listen, why don't you play Carl Reiner and let me play Police Chief Wiggum? I hate Carl Reiner.
That's a cute joke.
Obviously, he loves Carl Reiner. Hearing it in audio is when I got the, like, Homer is continually screaming throughout the rest of that exchange.
It actually reminds me of a future episode, The Blunder Years, in which Homer remembers a horrifying event from his childhood, and he spends, like, the entire day screaming, just like in that clip.
That was funny, but that whole episode, it's like, oh, that
Burns.
Yeah. His only employee is Smithers because his father died while working for him.
In his corpse shoot. No, Innocence 2. Tube.
That was a good line. That's true.
But it's a funny episode.
It was really a Stephen King parody.
It really was. Really.
Yeah, so then Bart's skill as a dancer, which was never returned again, impresses everybody, and then he gives the end of a sitcom speech, but reality sets in.
Go ahead and laugh, but I took a chance and did something I wanted to do, and if that makes me a sissy, well then, I guess I'm a sissy.
He's a sissy! Let's rush him!
Uh-oh.
Here he is, there, right there. Use the ballet. Leap, leap like you've never leapt before.
Looks like he took a pretty bad spill.
Well, as long as he's hurt.
Bart, I am so proud of you. You've shown a sensitive side of yourself that can never be erased. From this day forward, we are kindred spirits. Why'd you just leave me here when I clearly need medical attention?
Reminds me a lot of the Marge speech from the last episode, where a character gives a speech with swelling music and is immediately shot down right afterwards.
Well, I like the... why would a bully learn a lesson when they're like, if I'm gay, I guess I'm gay. He's gay! Beat him up!
As long as he's hurt.
Yeah.
Our town had the luxury of having lead singer punk rock band tattoos, earrings out the ass, and I found out my sister goes to ballet taught by his mother, where it turns out this punk rock... chain-smoking, druggy, tattooed is a fantastic ballet dancer and has been doing it closeted this whole time. And we all got that wonderful moment and nobody got beat up. But
that's nice.
That did happen.
But poor Bart, that they all just dance like girls. And a second subversion of sitcom moment is that you think it's a sweet moment of Lisa appreciating him. He's like, I'm in pain. I need
really
help. And lastly, though, I think it was a little beneath Simpsons to do such a big Star Wars reference.
That was a
like
bit
that.
Lame,
Like, use the Force, use the ballet. I was like,
I totally didn't realize
that. They
did
that in season one, the family jewels, son. Go
now,
for
that's
the family
true.
Jewels.
It's the same joke, even with the same, like, insert of the thought balloon. That's true. Well, speaking of the same joke, Homer puts on his sarcastic voice again, just as he did in Happy Land.
I feel this is like an animator doing a Silverman impression. It's not quite Silverman, but it's doing his same sort of poses.
I don't want to insult Mark Kirkland. I just think that Kirkland, he's been there since the beginning. He's the most prolific Simpsons director ever. He's directed more episodes than anyone. But I think it's really that, like, he's a B-level guy. Like, he's the best of the B-level guys, but he doesn't get the fanciest episodes, and he's not as... He'll
never be a guest now.
Mark Kirkland is great. I love Mark Kirkland. All right, but let's hear this scene.
Stupid driving test at the stupid DMV where stupid Patty and stupid Selma work. Sometimes I think God is teasing me.
just like he teased Moses in the desert.
Test it, Homer. God, test it, Moses. And try to be nice to my sisters. Very hard on me to have you fighting all the time.
Oh, okay, Marge. I'll get along with them. Then I will hug some snakes. Yes, I will hug and kiss some poisonous snakes. Now that's sarcasm.
I like that little tag.
I like that he's proud of it.
Yeah.
Like, now that's sarcasm.
They have a fun like battle of the points in the car. Being a jerk, minus a million points.
Minus a million points for you. Yeah, that they. I think Homer in general is so. They didn't even need to like weigh against him. He's like, he's going to fail. Homer sucks at everything.
Yeah, he's not going to pass the test. Especially when he's angry.
Yes, an angry Homer doing a written test for something, he's going to fail. They didn't need to say like, oh, he only filled it in a bubble half the way. They could, though, when they smoke in Celebration, there shouldn't be an ashtray in the DMV if it's illegal to smoke in the DMV.
It's their personal ashtray. They break it out.
I'd like to imagine they bring it with them.
Yeah.
I was just reminded, because we did a Halloween viewing of Chopping Mall, and it's just like my mall, it's 1987. There's ashtrays bolted to every wall, every space.
That's true.
There's ashtrays.
Oh, yeah. Like,
a cigarette
machine. Our mall on the second floor didn't have ashtrays bolted to the walls. The rail overlooking the first story was a trough, one long trough of cigarette ash and butts. And it's just, it's astonishing. I don't know if cigarettes were banned from, I have to imagine before I was born, that happened.
It took a long time.
My parents both work for the state. I don't remember seeing anyone smoking in those offices, but you could smoke pretty much anywhere
else. I worked at a state college campus in the dean's office where all the furniture was from the 70s, and every piece of furniture had an ashtray-sized hole drilled into it. So it's like, if you're going to smoke, there's an ashtray literally on every armchair.
You can find some arcade cabinets that just have ashtray holders built in inside of them.
It's funny, that same Halloween party at our friend's house, they bought a McDonald's branded ashtray from like the 70s, and it's beautiful. It's a beautiful
when
glass
I worked
ashtray.
There,
I think they're using it for
when
the
when I worked there. This exact
cigarettes.
Time, our McDonald's had smoking sections.
Oh yeah, yeah.
My grandma smoked. We were always in the smoking section.
Yeah.
Well, so that's why I think this. I love this joke, but one, their boss is such a stock butch mean lady character. Like they do nothing with her. The sanctimoniousness against cigarette smokers in this feels like written by cigarette smokers in the 90s who are just like, they say I can't smoke anywhere. I'm an oppressed person.
I interpret it as like L.A. was on the forefront of like, fuck cigarettes and people who smoke.
My word is Zima, not emphysema.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
That is perfect.
The funny thing is they're smoking because the stamping fail on the test gives them orgasms. They're like orgasmically saying,
they need to
smoke afterwards.
This is great by Julie.
Ladies, please don't tell me you're smoking in a government building. Because that is precisely the kind of infraction that can cost a couple of sisters their promotion.
What are you talking about? She? Who's? What? She? What? She this? Well, what?
I'll never forgive myself for this.
Wait a minute. Those are yours, sir?
Yes. I am in flavor country.
Both of them?
It's a big country.
Ladies, I apologize. And you, sir, are worse than Hitler.
I love Dan's non-committed reading of those lines. It's a big country.
It's a big country. Are those yours? Yes. But that ending is, that would have been in Home Improvement or Everybody Loves Raymond, like the moment of saving. It's just a little drama type thing at the end. But I do love that for 10 seconds, Julie Kavner, as two different characters, has to like hem and haw, like, And that joke would have worked the same in 5 seconds, but then they doubled it up like, it's so beautiful.
Yeah, I love the Patty and Selma voices. They're great.
Yes, yeah. But Homer saves them, and that's when they get to see the great Homer that they never see, and they then learn their lesson. And
it's also, I gotta point out, at this time I'm smoking Marlboro cigarettes. Ooh. Flavor Country is a 30-year marketing campaign that this is the one thing we're too young to remember, because that's what the commercial said. Welcome to Flavor Country.
I'm familiar with Alive with Pleasure.
Yeah,
Newport.
I'd walk a mile for a Camel, but
anything slim for me. That's my.
But yes, it's a Marlboro, a reference to Marlboro cigarettes marketing campaign.
Okay.
Which was just that was illegal at this point.
Do you think cigarettes will end in our lifetime?
Yes, like, I think
in,
so.
As he takes a long draw from his candy flavored vape.
Now everybody's going to have their magic wand for their vaping. Well, it's fine.
I see Patty and Selma as more like Virginia Slims ladies.
There's going to be Patty and Selma vape plot on an episode.
There's
got
to be, yeah. It's
eventually,
yeah.
The free idea, Simpsons writers, if you're listening,
this tastes like cotton candy.
I bet Al Jean would love that. It's ripped from the headline.
Yep.
There's a potting in my mouth, and everyone's invited.
But yeah, this I do like this ending. Just that it reminds me of Homie the Clown. Of they're just like, we got 20 seconds. Like, let's just speed this up.
And the end. Like, they literally speed away from the ending. And yes. I love the shot of Patty and Selma just standing there, just like kind of flummoxed. Like, what? Okay.
I do love that.
I'm speechless. You just saved our hides.
Please, on top of everything else, don't make me picture your hides.
It's a wonderful thing you did for my sisters.
I didn't do it for them. I did it for you, Marge. I'd kill for you. Please ask me to kill for you.
No, homie. You see, this is the stuff I've been telling you about that you never see. Homer. We're sorry. If there's anything we can do to make it up...
Call off the debt?
Or say we could let you pass your driver's test.
Call off the debt?
Well...
Debt's off. Let's go, Marge.
I just the look on their faces, like, which that cost them like at least $1,000.
Yeah, they still wanted him to pay them back.
They're like, no, you're supposed to pay me. Like,
my adult brain was just swimming in this. Like, did he just agree to not pay them up to $1,000? However, a promotion is worth that.
He saved
over
them.
Time.
They owe him that,
in the end. I guess the slavery was came at a cost too.
Yeah, so. He got to let them keep their promotions, and so they made more money than that, so that's fine. But I just love that he takes, debt's over, let's go.
Like, he takes their brief consideration as, you know, like the go flag. Like, yes it's on, go.
It had to end at that point.
No,
Marge would have intervened, but Homer, we're saved from all that, and we got a joke instead.
Yeah, you get a joke instead, which is good. There should have been more. This episode just has, like, 5 or 6 moments where, like, you guys could have wrote something better. Like, I'm used to you guys trying harder. Like that, I didn't mention before, but the ballet sign of, like, the T is silent. Like, you guys could have had a funnier.
Yeah, there are better Simpsons signs. But for as weak as this episode is, how structurally uneven it is, there are some, like, amazing jokes that come out of it just because you can't avoid having those in this era of The Simpsons. So the whole plot is, the plot as a whole does not hold together. I wish it would have been, like, A and B, or just maybe A, but it's like A, B, and C.
Yeah. And then also the most tacked on, like, the beginning of, they'd had guest stars play themselves in a similar fashion, like Tony Bennett, but that was
The joke was he was there.
But meanwhile, in this, it's like, wow, I can't believe Mel Brooks is in Springfield. It's same like, whoa, Lady Gaga.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's always, she's
Linda
my immediate
Ronstadt.
One. Linda Ronstadt. It's a Muppet Show moment, which I say this as a huge nerd for the Muppet Show. I love the Muppet Show. Mm-hmm. Wow, Bernadette Peters, are you going to help me with my problems? Those moments are great, but you think The Simpsons is better than that. They are usually better than that with finding a funny thing to do with a guest voice. So, yeah.
And they did with Susan Sarandon.
Yes, so I think we set our piece on this episode. Thanks for listening, everybody. I've been your host, Bob Mackey. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. My other podcast is Retronauts. Every Monday, it's a classic gaming podcast. Look for it at Retronauts.com or search for Retronauts in your podcast machine. We've been doing this for over 11 years now, so you might have heard of us. If not, we have to have talked about something you're into, so please look us up on the internet.
Mm-hmm. Talking Simpsons is pretty great, but wouldn't it be better if you could hear it a week early and without ads and then with a ton of extra stuff?
Oh.
That's all on Patreon. .com/TalkingSimpsons, where for $5 a month or more, you could get access to that, plus the exclusive Talking Critic show, where we go through every episode of The Critic, our multiple season wrap-ups, the first season of Talking Simpsons, and interviews with so many cool people, including former executive producer Bill Oakley and creator of OKKO, Ian Jones Quarty. We have tons of cool interviews on there. You should definitely check out patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons. And as long as you're listening here, maybe tell your friends to resubscribe or just to talk about how awesome this is. And also, you know, a new iTunes review, it couldn't hurt.
Couldn't hurt.
I became the 2,000-year-old man there.
That goes triple true for Laser Time and the whole fucking network. God damn it. I believe Henry just joined us for an episode about dark, dark Disney park deaths.
Yeah, four, baby.
Yeah, we also 30-20-10, which looks back 30-20-10. A really good way to revisit a bunch of stuff you may or may not like. It's a fun ADD pop culture show, and Video Game Apocalypse every Friday. Looking at a video game feature about the entire medium of games with a look at some new releases and news. Pretty fun.
Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with A Star Is Burns, a controversial crossover episode. Goodness. See you then.
Infotainment.